Upfront, inside the entertainment industry, is brought to you by member-supported Jazz 91.9 WCLK.
Coming up on this week's edition of Upfront, actors Lisa Arendale and E. Roger Mitchell are here to chat about their new BET Plus film, Favorite Son. Camille Russell Love, executive director of the Atlanta Mayor's Office of Cultural Affairs, is here to talk about their new virtual series, In Their Tradition, and the return of the Atlanta Jazz Festival. And finally, I catch up with Don Lewis, the iconic star of TV, stage, and screen, is here to talk about participating in the upcoming virtual program, 50 and 50, and much more. I'll also be playing music from Don Lewis, as well as Atlanta Jazz Festival performer Lauren Talese, and throwback sounds from CeCe Winans and Michelle Indeghio Cello. But first, here's an important message from the High Museum of Art.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the High Museum of Art, presenting an exhibition of the life and legacy of Georgia native David Driscoll now through May 9th, 2021. The exhibition showcases Driscoll's painting and printmaking practices and 60 works of art spanning 7 decades of his career as an artist, curator, and scholar. Time tickets are required. More information is available at high.org.
Hi, this is CeCe Winans, and you're listening to Upfront, hosted by Ray Cornelius.
My first segment features E. Roger Mitchell and Lisa Arendale. The two are starring in the upcoming BET Plus original movie, Favorite Son. The film focuses on twin brothers in a gospel group who are struggling to find balance in life, love, faith, and religion while under the strict rule of their father, who runs a megachurch. I caught up with both actors this week to chat about their roles and much more.
Let's talk about your characters, because you both play the bishop and first lady of a huge megachurch. You have two sons that are part of the praise team, and there's a little bit of conflict there. Let's talk about these characters, and were they inspired by people that you actually know? And we'll start with you, Lisa.
So I am acquainted with a female who is not only the pastor's wife, but she herself is a pastor. And my character is not a pastor. And so I think, however, that her strength resides within the four walls, the huge, magnificent walls of her well-appointed home. And rather than being a pastor in the church, I think that she wields her power with her sons and her husband. And it's a very fine line. It's a very difficult line to walk as a powerful, articulate, intelligent, educated woman who desires to be submissive to her husband. It is a hard road to walk, because submission in 2021, there is a way to express it that doesn't look like it did for my grandmother. And in this film, we struggle with that. E. Roger and I struggle with that. We are two people who have been made one in marriage, and she struggles to make sure she is seen and that her position in the home and in the marriage is reverenced. And she wants her family to be one unit, which is really incredible, because she has two grown sons played by Jonathan McReynolds and by
Rotimi,
who are two very strong, beautiful adult males, but also men, right? Because there's a difference. We got grown males and we got men. It's very different. And so for her to be able to bring all that in together around her proverbial dinner table in her home and to unite them is, I think, a lot of work. And it's a considerable amount of stress, especially when you consider that she is concerned about how it looks to the world.
Hey, Roger, as the bishop, was there any inspiration for that character?
The word inspiration is the choice. Examples, so I'd like to choose example. I don't personally know anyone, a pastor or a minister of a mega church. I mean, I do know, but I'm not connected to anyone like on an everyday basis or, you know, that kind of thing. But I obviously have eyes and I've lived a little bit in my life. So I've seen and I've heard what could and could not be or what's true or untrue about those transpirings that comes along with that decision to be that responsible for being a shepherd and the imperfections that come along with being human. So that's my inspiration because I always come from a humanistic standpoint. So I'll say knowing anybody, hell man, you know, I could say a lot of things, but anybody could, that's just be my opinion. So for me, it's about truth. And I think I said to one of my sons, I said, because we were doing a church scene or whatever, and I said, as an actor, I don't like to play around with God. I don't know what people believe in. I'm not putting that out there. I'm just saying everybody has a right, and that's totally completely okay with me. As I've grown in life, you know what? You got to do your thing. I get that. My point is where I come from and the cloth that I'm cut from. I don't like to play around with it. And that's what I don't do. And I was like, gosh, I knew this was going to happen. I got to be a part of sincerely dealing with spirit, like spirit. And for me, that was a little bit of a struggle because I don't like to ham that up. You know what I'm saying? But story-wise, we need to do that so that we can hold this mirror up of life, because these things can and do happen. So then the actor has to step back in and do the work. So that being kind of answering your question, pastor wise, hey, I have a lot of examples that I keep personal when it comes to that. Now, as far as the relationship with Mama, wonderful Miss Lisa, you said something just now, you used the word submission in 20 and 21. Personally, and I am not a chauvinist, I have 5 sisters. I had a phenomenal mama. I have 2 daughters, by the grace of God, and some wonderful nieces and a wonderful wife. So I'm not a chauvinist. But the word submission, I don't even know if that word exists anymore in relationships, quite frankly. However, we're talking about this film in that context. But I don't know what that means anymore, because obviously I'm just like, hey, we're here. We're all here. That's what mom and daddy taught me. They took care of each other. And I think the relationship is about taking care of each other. And I think we attempted to try to convey that visually and vocally and audibly. So I don't, you know, it's a part of the human experience. And it's about a choice, what one decides to do with their life. And I do believe, and I think Lisa and I may have talked about it in some way, form, or fashion, we made a decision to do this. And in the onset of that decision, it was eternally optimistic. But things happen and nobody's perfect. No excuses. This trifling is trifling. Sorry if y'all listening. But there are no excuses. But we all still are susceptible to being human beings. And I think the goal is to try to be perfect, quote unquote, which I hope anybody who hears this, it's extremely unattainable. Well, it's unattainable, but the goal is to continue to try to be better on a constant basis. That's why they call it daily bread. You can't eat the whole loaf in one day. That's why it's called daily bread. Somebody told me that. That's not original. Apparently it's not. The Bible's older than me and you, all y'all. But that's why I feed from that as far as a relationship as it pertains to the story and the script in the film. But that's the humanistic aspect of what I come from as an artist. And I try to bring those things with me. And hopefully that will be conveyed and hopefully in some way, form, or fashion, appreciated.
Catch Favorite Son on BET Plus beginning May 6th.
Strong enough to even make a start, but you'll never find peace of mind till you listen.
Hi, Cassie Davis here. You're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius. Take it away, Ray!
You just heard the voice of rising jazz vocalist Lauren Talese performing the George Michael classic, Kissing a Fool. She is just one of the many performers I got a chance to talk with as part of the Atlanta Jazz Festival's new virtual series, In the Tradition. The 30-minute program airs every Tuesday night and features media personalities and influencers talking to this year's Atlanta Jazz Festival performers. Here to talk about In the Tradition and the return of the Atlanta Jazz Festival is Executive Director of the Atlanta Mayor's Office of Cultural Affairs, Ms. Camille Russell-Love.
Well, Ms. Camille Russell-Love, welcome to Upfront. How are you?
I'm great, and how are you?
I'm doing just fine. It's truly an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show. I think this is your first time on my show. You've been on everybody else's show, but this is your first
time. I'm not going to say I've been on everybody else's show, but I have been on numerous shows, but I'm honored today to be on yours.
Yeah.
Thank you for asking me.
Yeah, no problem. We were super excited when you guys reached out and said that you had this amazing virtual series titled In the Tradition that would start Jazz Appreciation Month, which is this month or the tail end of it. And this would continue all the way up into the Atlanta Jazz Festival, which will be returning, folks, in the fall. We're super excited about that. But Camille, let's, if we can go back, you know, COVID happened a year ago. And I think like all of us are, you know, it's like the world came completely, you know, to a complete end, but you guys continued the music and you had a virtual series prior to this, which was kind of a precursor to this. So can we talk about that?
Yes. When we were first confronted with COVID, which was March of last year, we were well on our way to producing the 43rd Atlanta Jazz Festival that was scheduled for that Memorial Day. And so we went through being optimistic. We went through several iterations of proposed date changes and, you know, talking to the musicians that we had booked, you know, about whether or not they'd be available on this date. And then when that didn't work out and things got worse, how about a date out in the future? So we finally asked them if they would confirm for this Memorial Day. And lo and behold, we still are in a place where we can't have a festival. And so last year, what we decided to do was to use the local artist in a 31 Days of Jazz continuation, which was a program that we had done for several years out in the community. But we took the opportunity to really focus on Atlanta's jazz musicians. So we presented every day during the month of May, one of Atlanta's finest. And it was just a wonderful series. In fact, the city of Atlanta is going to be showing those performances during the month of May on Channel 26 of this year. So, you know, we learned how to do a virtual thing out of necessity. And then last year, when we also moved from spring to fall, when we usually have a festival called Elevate, we went back to the well and then repeated some of those jazz performances as a way of keeping the music alive and reminding people that music is still around. It hadn't died a death of COVID. And so this year, once we got around to having a date almost certain in the future, And once we had gotten all of our performers to reconfirm, we thought that it would be important for Atlantans to learn more about these performers in their own words. And we created this series called In the Tradition. And so it is an opportunity for jazz musicians to tell their own story. And there have just been some wonderful stories so far, and I'm looking so forward to learning more about these wonderful musicians and about this music called jazz through their eyes and through their experiences.
And I have to admit, WCLK was as equally as excited when we received the invite to be a part of this virtual series. You know, these are 30-minute conversations with these jazz artists, really getting personal and talking to them. My very first one, of course, debuts this coming Tuesday, May the 4th at 7:30. And I had an opportunity to chat with a jazz vocalist and Sarah Vaughn, international, let me make sure I'm getting this right, international jazz competition winner, Lauren Talese. And it was such a pleasure talking to her. She was a new face and a new voice that I had never heard of. And by the time we finished that conversation, we're like BFFs. I follow her. I like her stuff. She likes mine. And so it was a really, really good opportunity for me to really get to know her as a up-and-coming jazz vocalist. And this series really breaks down. I mean, we really talked to them about how they were affected by COVID, how they were able to persevere, new projects that they were working on. A lot of new music is actually coming out of 2020. Okay. Are you finding that with a lot of the artists that are going to be performing this year?
Well, what we intended with this series, because the Atlanta Jazz Festival is a festival that is committed to jazz. We don't want to do pop or anything else. We really want to focus on jazz. And so some of the musicians that will be performing are very well known, but there are some who are not so well known, like Lauren, who are outstanding jazz musicians that are on the up and up. And we think that it is important that those voices be heard. And the In the Tradition series provided us with an opportunity for us to really hear their voice, not just their music when they come to the festival, but for us to memorialize who they are and, you know, how they are pursuing their music in a time like this.
Absolutely. And in addition to my voice, you're also going to hear interviews with Jamal Ahmed as well as Deb Moore. So we're really, really, really excited to be sort of hosting, I guess, if you will, the main portion of this virtual series. Now, speaking of the festival, I know that it's coming back in the fall. How are you guys approaching it? Hopefully at that point, more people will be vaccinated. Are you excited to kind of, you know, because we've been discussing it here at the station, how are we going to present WCLK as part of, you know, having a booth and things of that nature set up out there?
So the answer is, are we excited? Yay! We are. We pursue the Atlanta Jazz Festival as a gift to Atlanta's residents and visitors. We also look upon it as a cultural experience. You know, it is an opportunity for, you know, people to come out and be in a space where they're going to hear some outstanding jazz music. And it's going to be a true experience where they can be with their families and friends and they can commune together in a space. So I was excited today to hear the president, Biden, announced some, easing of restrictions when you're out in a public space. We expect the Jazz Festival to be just as big as it has been in the past because there's a pent-up demand to go somewhere. We're going to have some safety procedures that we're going to ask our patrons to adhere to. And they will be consistent with whatever the CDC tells us is required at that point in time. But we will have a lot of hand washing stations and sanitized stations. And I'm sure a lot of people will be giving away masks and We will try to enforce again whatever the CDC says is appropriate for that period of time.
All right, Camille Russell Love, thank you so very much for being my guest today on Upfront. Again, we're talking about their new virtual series, In the Tradition. These will air now through the fall when the Atlanta Jazz Festival will return to historic Piedmont Park. And again, we're super excited that you guys are taking this giant leap and putting it out there and keeping the music alive. So we really do appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Jasmine Guy, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
That was singer, actress, and Broadway diva Dawn Lewis performing her original song, Take Me Finally. The Triple Threat performer is returning to her theatrical roots this week as part of the Billie Holiday Theater's virtual monologue showcase titled 50 and 50, Shattering the Glass Ceiling. The show is curated by acclaimed playwright Dominique Marceau and features a star-studded collective of women who are defying the odds. I caught up with Dawn, who is currently in Los Angeles shooting the new season of Fox's 9-1-1, to chat about participating in the show and much more.
When I got the press release that you were part of this amazing event that's going to be coming up on May the 6th. I was like, you know what? She's someone I have not had on my show. I'd love to talk to her because she, like I said, offline, you've been booked and busy. COVID has not stopped you from moving. You've been very, very busy and blessed with a lot of projects. We're going to start with this one, the 50 and 50 event, Shattering the Glass Ceiling, which is taking place on Thursday, May the 6th. That includes you, as well as one of my throwbacks, Phyllis Yvonne Stickney, also amazing trans actress from Pose, and Andra McDonald. So many fabulous divas are part of this project. So how did you get involved?
Well, I have a long history at the Billy. I lived less than a mile in Bed-Stuy. That was where I was born and raised. And I was there as a young kid when the Billy opened. So it was less than a mile from my house, and I wanted to be an actor. And I remember I went to audition for one of the first plays, Young, Gifted, and Broke, that they had at the Billy. And I thought, if I can make it on the Billy Holiday stage, I'm going to be famous. And I auditioned and did not get the audition. I was not hired, but my dreams were not shattered. But again, that was when the theater first opened, and the journey just came full circle. Whenever I go home, whenever I go back to Brooklyn, I stop through. And while I was there doing Tina from 2019 into 2020, before everything shut down with COVID during Black History Month, I would go and I would lead workshops on my day off down there at the Billy. So it was truly a full circle moment for me. And I'm on their advisory board now. So it's a blessing to be a part of whatever happens at the Billy, because they are phenomenal for the community and for this country when it comes to theater for people of color.
Since this is an evening of monologues, was there a particular one that you decided to do something original, or did you decide to do a monologue that was previously written by someone?
No, we were all assigned our pieces. So I was open to whatever piece you put in front of me. That's what I'm going to do my best to manifest. And I believe that they, you know, pick things that suited people's personalities, et cetera. And we just trusted the process, and we trusted them, you know, to utilize us as they thought best. Primarily, I think that they strategically picked the women that they wanted to read these pieces for reasons, for them to just be themselves and bring themselves into each and every piece. So everyone that is collaborating and participating in this, they are just off the chart, like insanely talented. So I'm really humbled and honored to be a part of this company.
We actually have a new animated series that's coming up, Star Trek, The Lower Deck. Can we talk about that project as well?
Yes, absolutely. Well, Star Trek Lower Decks is the second animated incarnation of the Star Trek franchise. The first one was in the 70s, 80s was the first animated Star Trek with the original cast characters with the Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock, et cetera. And this is the first one since then in decades, but this is a completely different take on the Star Trek universe, where every other series you've seen, you know, you see people at the top of their game, doing their best to save the universe, to cooperate with each other, to bring out the best in each other. Our show takes a very, very irreverent look at the people that work in the underbelly of the ship to keep things moving. And you see them at their human best and human worst, with all their flaws and all their bad choices, and us just trying to get through the day without blowing something up or killing each other. But there's nothing but love and friendship, and it is hilarious to me. And we actually debuted last summer, last August. And the show was so well received that we finished recording our second season, and we've got an air date of August 12th for the launching of the second season. And before, at the same time they announced the second season debut, they also announced that the network is so impressed with our show that we've already been guaranteed a third season. So we're really excited about that. And this year, the show got nominated for an NAACP Image Award for Best Animated Series. And I had the honor of being nominated for Best Voice Actor for my role as Captain Carol Freeman on the show.
Wow. Congratulations. That is,
thank
that is
you.
So awesome. Yeah. I also wanted to talk about Rich and the Ruthless, because we actually had Victoria Raul on the show a couple of years back and was super excited about this. She was so you know, elated to be directing and finally doing some Black girl magic behind the scenes. And now we hear that this show has been picked up on BET Plus, and you're part of that cast as well. So how excited are you about that project?
I think it is fantastic. You know, like animation, I mean, I do voices for shows. I do the Simpsons. I do Apple and Onion. I do Spirit. I do a list of shows. So that way you get to be all kinds of characters that you wouldn't normally be in front of the camera. So this show, The Rich and the Ruthless, I'm also someone that you don't normally see me play. I actually play a supporting role in the show as the wardrobe mistress for this soap opera. And I'm someone who is just over everybody. I'm over it because in my heyday, I should have been the star. And for whatever happened in my career, it didn't manifest. So now I'm cutting clothes and pinning clothes and dressing all of these very self-absorbed, you know, soap opera people. And just, I waste no opportunity to tell each and every one of them how fat they're getting and why they make my job so just difficult. I'd really need you to fix your attitude and that number on the scale right now. I love it. It's hilarious to me. And I'm so proud of Vicky. I remember she told me, we were at Nelson Mandela's memorial service when he passed away in the basement of the church. And she told me her concept for this soap opera and what she wanted to do. And that was just the germ of the idea. So you know what year that was. And she took her time and brought some amazing, talented people together to be in the cast. And here we are, fourth season in. She's getting it done. So yes, I'm so proud of her and having a blast being a part of the show.
All right, Don Lewis, thank you so very much for being a guest today on Upfront. Again, we're talking about 50 and 50, which is taking place on Thursday, May the 6th, 7 p.m. It's a virtual evening of divas, monologues, great information. And we're super excited that you all are doing this and cannot wait to check it out. You can get more information about this event at WCLK.com. Don Lewis, thank you so much.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for being interested in, you know, reaching out to us to bring this to life. And hopefully whoever watches it, enjoys it, is inspired by it. And, you know, there's more to come, because the more we support, the more people see the need for us to do these kinds of projects. And there'll just be more and more coming.
Well, that'll do it for this week's show. I'd like to thank all of my special guests, E. Roger Mitchell and Lisa Arendelle, Camille Russell Love, and Don Lewis. I'd also like to thank our engineer, Jami Wellman, and you. Please join us next week for another exciting edition of Upfront Inside the Entertainment Industry.
If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront Inside the Entertainment Industry has been brought to you by Jazz 91.9 WCLK, Atlanta's Jazz Station, and is recorded from the campus of Clark Atlanta University. Back in the day, when everyone was black and kind.